So all of the things that we thought didn't work or didn't matter, or didn't have an impact, ultimately did through the bigger movement they were a part of. And that's the message of our film, that you've got to be a part of a bigger movement. And that's where impact happens. They all win.
And I want to thank you for being with us, Andy Biklebaum and Mike Bonanno, members of the Yes Men. The Yes Men Are Revolting is the name of the film. This is Democracy Now!, and we have two job openings, a senior news producer and an engagement editor. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Masood, Ravi Karan, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Anna Uzbek. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Maté, our website, democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Abe Proctor. Today, we'll ask if whistleblower Edward Snowden is a modern American hero or a dangerous traitor.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor for ALEC Expo's film screening and workshop on June 18th. 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. ALEC, the American Legislators Exchange Council, is a corporate-directed organization which writes model legislation for state legislatures around the nation that is beneficial to multinational corporations. Secretive corporate-directed and funded organizations like ALEC undermine the principles of citizens participating in democratic processes. ALEC Expos explain how ALEC functions, who is involved, and how to fight back to promote democratic, non-corporate values. Again, that's ALEC Expos, June 18th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church on Southwest 12th and Salmon in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 2nd through 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Four stages, 100 performers, including the Greg Allman Band, Galactic with Macy Gray, and Buddy Guy. There will be after-hours performances, shows on the Portland Spirit, and much more. Again, that's the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Thursday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm/waterfrontbluesfestival2015.
Attention KBOO members and listeners. The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill four upcoming vacancies on the Board of Directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KBOO website and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kboocommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete forms will not be considered as fulfilling the statement of interest requirement by the KBOO bylaws. Packets are due by Saturday, July 11th. The candidate statements submitted as part of the nomination packet will be posted to KBOO's website, and candidates will be expected to participate in an interview for broadcast and a Q&A session at the annual meeting. For more information, please contact the nominating committee at kboocommunity@gmail.com.
Hey, good morning, good morning, good morning. This is KBOO.FM on your internet dial, 90.7 FM on your radio dial. I don't know why I listed the internet first. I don't know. Freudian slip, perhaps. My name's Abe Proctor. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. My erstwhile companion, Joe Uris, is away today. So it's just going to be little old me. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in today's conversation, which I hope will be a rousing one. If you're a little shy, you know, if you feel better typing instead of speaking, you can do that. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/AbeandJoe. So, a little behind-the-scenes conversation here. What exactly happens, some of you have asked from time to time, how do you and Joe pick topics for each week's show? And the answer is it's a pretty haphazard process. There's really no rhyme or reason to it. It's usually done a few days prior, sometimes the day prior to the show. We like to preserve that flexibility in case something really interesting comes up that we want to talk about. But sometimes we'll plan things a little farther out. We'll line up guests who happen to be coming through town, that sort of thing. Anyway, all this is to say that it was suggested to me that we spend this week's show talking about Bernie Sanders. My initial reaction was, yeah, that's a good idea, because for the record, I think Bernie Sanders is pretty cool. I'm a Bernie Sanders fan. But then I realized that it is June of 2015, and if we talked about Bernie Sanders on this program, it would be in the context of him as a presidential candidate. It's still a year and a half until the freaking presidential election of 2016. So I am not going to do that. I am not going to do that. That is one of the biggest traps, the biggest pitfalls of contemporary political journalism, is that we focus so much on the horse race aspect of the presidential contest that it obscures everything else. The issues that affect our day-to-day lives, the issues that affect our rights and our liberties as citizens of a free democratic republic. All these things are far more important than who's going to win the presidential election 18 months from now. Well, a little less than 18 months, I guess. So, Bernie, we're going to get to you, man. We're just going to have to put you on the back burner for the time being, because we're just not going to go there. I refuse. Now, watch a bunch of people call up to talk about Bernie Sanders, because that's generally how this tends to work. So what I want to talk about today is a gentleman who's been the subject of many programs here on the Abe and Joe Show, Edward Snowden. Now, Edward Snowden, as you'll recall, a little quick background on him. 2012, he was employed by a technological firm contracting with the National Security Agency. Snowden came to realize that the data he was handling every day, that he was helping to encrypt and protect, the data represented activities that amounted to substantial breaches of our constitutional rights, particularly our freedom against unlawful search and seizure by the mass collection of data in many forms, telephone data, emails, internet activity. This all came to pass in the wake of the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, and specifically the provisions enacted by the passage of the USA Patriot Act, which, as you'll recall, was a law of many thousand pages that mysteriously emerged fully drafted in time to be voted on by a scared Congress in the days following the terrorist attacks of September 2001. The Patriot Act. The Patriot Act provided the framework for the surveillance state architecture that has sprung up in its wake. So Edward Snowden's working for a firm contracting with the NSA to keep track of all this data. He realized that the government, not just the National Security Agency, but the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Central Intelligence Agency, and a whole alphabet soup of acronyms that most people know nothing about, and the military of the United States of America, were routinely spying on Americans without cause, violating Americans' Fourth Amendment protections without cause, all in an attempt to track down, allegedly, potential terrorist threats and end them before they had a chance to come to fruition and injure or kill any Americans. Now, nominally, this was why this was all happening. But the evidence is thin to suggest that any of these activities on part of the NSA or anybody else ever led to the prevention of a terrorist plot. That's a subject of some debate. But on balance, an evaluation of the modern American surveillance state has to arrive at a conclusion that says it's not worth it. This isn't working. This is an unnecessary, unconstitutional infringement of the rights of a free people. And it's being done in the name of national security, and it is in no measurable way improving national security. It is unnecessary. It is wrong. It is something that ought to be done away with. So Edward Snowden came to realize this. In his subsequent interviews, he has revealed that people have asked him, well, you know, who elected you to do this? You know, who reached out, tapped you on the shoulder and said, you are the guy who's going to come public with these this information. You're going to be the one. And he said he realized one day, sitting around the table, that everybody else knew what he knew. Everybody else was doing what he was doing, but none of them were stepping forward. And there comes a point, he said, in the life of every citizen, when you're confronted by this sort of thing, that it's time to act. And that's what he did. He fled the country. He went to Hong Kong. He made contact with two people, Glenn Greenwald, an independent American journalist, and a French documentary filmmaker. And he handed over to them tens of thousands of files that incriminated the National Security Agency and others in the sorts of activities that I've just described. Predictably, he was immediately smeared by the press. He was immediately discredited. It was suggested he might be mentally ill. It was suggested he might have a personal vendetta. It was any number of things were brought up to suggest that perhaps this guy ought not to be trusted. Interestingly enough, nobody came out and said, hey, the revelations that Edward Snowden has just dropped upon the public are wrong. Everything he said is wrong. Nobody came out and said that. People came out and discredited him. People called for him to be tried as a traitor to the United States. People called for him to be prosecuted under the Espionage Act. People, as I mentioned, suggested he was mentally ill, that he was vengeful, that he was unhinged. People even called for his execution. Let's not forget that treason is one of the few crimes enumerated in the Constitution as a capital crime. You can literally be executed if you're found guilty of treason to the United States of America. This is what people were calling for after Edward Snowden made his revelations. But nobody was saying what he said was wrong. And so the ripples of what Snowden revealed have continued to play out. Most recently, they surfaced again in a couple of ways. First of all, a recent U.S. Court of Appeals decision. The U.S. Court of Appeals, a three federal judge panel, overturned an earlier ruling by another court that said that the controversial surveillance practices revealed by Snowden could not be subject to judicial review. So let's think about that for a second. An American court said that whatever the government is doing to protect you and I from terrorist threats, real or imagined, is something that is outside the boundaries of judicial review. Now, what is judicial review? I'm sorry if I'm sounding a little junior high civics here, but it's important to put this all in the right sort of context. What is judicial review? Judicial review is a mechanism by which we, through our judicial representatives in government, representatives might not be the right term right here because we don't vote for these people, generally speaking, especially at the higher levels. But it's a mechanism by which a law or an action taken by government can be evaluated through a constitutional lens and a judgment reached that determines whether or not that law or that activity is constitutional. Whether or not that law or that activity abides by the letter and the spirit of the United States Constitution. So the first federal panel to review the bulk collection of, and we're talking just about a small fraction of what the NSA was doing here. The ruling pertained to the bulk collection of telephone metadata, which is a strange word. They said, no, this is beyond judicial review. So what does that mean? That in and of itself ought to be a red flag for everybody. Everything is subject to judicial review. That's what it means to be a free citizen in a representative democracy. Everything is subject to judicial review. If the president steps out of line and abuses his authority, he can be checked either by Congress or by the courts. If Congress steps out of line, passes a law that is oppressive, that is unconstitutional in some way, that is subject to review by the courts. So to have a court say, to have a court look at what the National Security Agency was doing and say, no, this is outside the bounds of judicial review. There's nothing we can do here. That is unconstitutional. That ought to cause every citizen to sit up, look around, and say, what exactly is going on here? So the court, the other three-judge panel that reviewed this decision, and if you're thinking the United States court system is a little bit Byzantine, you would be correct, said that no, that ruling is wrong. These practices are subject to judicial review. Further, this court ruled that it wasn't going to do anything about the mass collection of telephone metadata by the National Security Agency because the Patriot Act, which we described just a few minutes ago, was up for renewal in the United States Congress. So the court opted to not stop the collection of telephone metadata, but opted to let Congress fix it. A questionable decision, I'm sure. Congress ultimately declined to renew certain parts of the USA Patriot Act, replacing them instead with something called the USA Freedom Act. Yes, and we're deep into the alphabet soup now. The USA Freedom Act is more or less a watered-down version of the USA Patriot Act, which reimposes certain restrictions on the government collection of data. So one might argue that this was a step back towards a more free state of affairs. In my opinion, it's somewhat unsatisfactory, but nevertheless, there it is. So this is the backdrop to the reemergence of Edward Snowden into the common narrative. How did this happen? Well, last Sunday, the Rupert Murdoch-owned Sunday Times, a British newspaper, published a story with this headline, British spies betrayed to the Russians and the Chinese. The article alleged that hackers in the employ of the Russian and Chinese governments managed to break into the top secret cache of files that Snowden had turned over to journalists. First, as I mentioned, Glenn Greenwald and the aforementioned French documentary filmmaker. Then later to journalistic outlets like The Guardian, Der Spiegel, The New York Times, and many others. So the Russians and the Chinese, says the Sunday Times, managed to steal a bunch of these files, directly placing the lives of British agents in danger and even requiring the recall of these agents from missions that were active. In other words, a security breach that British intelligence believed to be serious enough to endanger the lives of its agents. Well, it turned out that actually none of this was true. This was another attempt to smear Edward Snowden, another attempt to discredit him, and, one might argue, a nice smokescreen to talk about in light of the fact that, first, a three-judge United States panel decided that this collection of data was, in fact, open to judicial review, and the fact that the United States Congress decided to rein in the power of American spy agencies to gather data. So the guardians of the surveillance state, seeing that perhaps their position had become a little less secure than it was before, floated this story of Chinese and Russian hackers stealing Snowden's files as an attempt to once again rally public support in favor of the surveillance state and its unchecked activities. So there's a couple things I want to talk with you guys about today. Most notably, I want to take a step back and talk about what Edward Snowden did in the first place, why he did it, whether or not it's a good idea. Does anybody have the right ever to reveal classified government information? Does anyone have the right ever to reveal classified government information in the context of an ongoing war, in the context of national security? Is that ever okay? If so, under what circumstances? Was Edward Snowden right to do what he did? Here's my take on this whole subject. I think that at such time as a citizen of a free republic encounters evidence of government misbehavior, and that government misbehavior represents a direct breach of the social contract as it is expressed through the United States Constitution, each of us in that situation has a fundamental duty to bring that activity to light. It is not right to do anything else. Edward Snowden, in my opinion, is a hero. Some may call him a traitor. I think he's a patriot. I think he did the right thing, and I think any right-thinking citizen placed in his situation should have done exactly as he did. It was right to bring these activities to light. It was right to disclose the scale to which they had grown. It was the right thing to do. He deserves neither exile, nor imprisonment, nor execution. Edward Snowden is a good American, and he did what any good American should have done in his situation. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. If you'd like to leave a comment on our Facebook page, you can do that. www.facebook.com/Abe and Joe. So I want to hear what you think. Is there a place for whistleblowers in our society? We got a global war on terror going on. We got a bunch of brown Muslims trying to hurt us. How dare he do what he did? Of course the government should listen in on our phone calls. Of course the government should pay attention to who we're calling and when and for how long and where. Of course the government should sift through our emails. Of course the government should watch what we're doing online. We're at war. We're at war with a bunch of Muslim terrorists who want to kill us. Edward Snowden's a traitor. Edward Snowden should go to jail or worse. If we ever get our hands on Edward Snowden, he will rue the day. Or is Edward Snowden a good American? Did he do what he needed to do? Did he, in fact, conduct a public service? Yeah, I think that he did. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So let's dig a little bit deeper into this. The government of the United Kingdom, specifically MI6, the British equivalent of the CIA, has since backed off a little bit from the claims expressed in the Sunday Times story, said that, no, we didn't actually have to recall any agents. This is just like what happened with the United States earlier on in this whole saga. Initially, the FBI claimed that the revelations produced by Edward Snowden compromised the activities of several of its agents. They later retracted that statement. And if this appears to be you to be a new phenomenon, I guarantee you that it's not. This is exactly what happened, for example, to Daniel Ellsberg after he released the Pentagon Papers during the Vietnam War. Ellsberg was smeared, discredited. His character was dragged through the mud. All sorts of allegations were whispered. All sorts of nasty things were anonymously stated to the press, and so on and so forth. This is nothing new. This is what happens when people in power are exposed and they feel that perhaps their position is not as secure as they thought it was. This is what they do. They lash out. They smear the character of those making allegations against them. And that's what happened. I'll give you just an example. This is from a United Press International story right around the time Ellsberg had broken the Pentagon Papers to the press. An attorney for Dr. Daniel Ellsberg has chided the Senate Watergate Committee for failing to challenge what he called, quote, totally false and slanderous, unquote, testimony by the former White House aide John D. Ehrlichman, suggesting that Dr. Ellsberg delivered copies of the Pentagon Papers to the Soviet embassy. So this is a similar sort of thing. People have accused Edward Snowden of providing these files to Al-Qaeda and similar organizations, to governments like China and Russia. Of course, none of it is true. But when exposed, when the emperor is walking down the street and it's clear he doesn't have any clothes on, usually the first thing the emperor and his agents do is start attacking and smearing the character of those who have the temerity to point out he's wearing no clothes. That's just how these things work. And it's hard to avoid the conclusion. And I would point your attention to the writings of Glenn Greenwald on this particular subject. It's hard to avoid the conclusion that it is now modern journalistic modus operandi to simply take what anonymous government forces tell them at face value and regurgitate it. Here's Greenwald writing in The Intercept at firstlook.org/The Intercept. Western journalists claim that the big lesson that they learned from their key role in selling the Iraq war to the public is that it's hideous, corrupt, and often dangerous journalism to give anonymity to government officials, to let them propagandize the public, then to uncritically accept those anonymously voiced claims as the truth. But in reality, they've learned no such lesson. That tactic continues to be the staple of how major U.S. and British media outlets report, especially in the national security area. And journalists who read such reports continue to treat self-serving decrees by unnamed, unseen officials laundered through their media as gospel, no matter how dubious are the claims or factually false is the reporting. This is what we've come to. This is why it takes a whistleblower to uncover what the investigative watchdog press should have been uncovering in the first place. And this is what the so-called Fourth Estate, the bulwark of civil liberties, does in response. They simply regurgitate what anonymous government sources tell them. This is a sad state of affairs, and I would like to hear what you think about it. 503-231-8187. Was Edward Snowden right to do what he did? Is the press right to continue to take anonymous government sources at face value? Has the collapse of investigative journalism in the era of the 24-hour news cycle, is that part and parcel to the problem we're facing right now? And what do we do about it? Why do you have to hear this discussion on a community-supported radio station? Why can't you read about it in the New York Times? Why don't you hear about it other places? 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Here's a little excerpt from the Sunday Times article, which you can still read online. Unfortunately, it's behind a subscription wall, but if you dig around a little bit, you'll be able to find the article in its entirety. Western intelligence agencies say they have been forced into the rescue operations after Moscow gained access to more than 1 million classified files held by the former American security contractor, Mr. Snowden, who fled to seek protection from Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, after mounting one of the largest leaks in U.S. history. Senior government sources confirmed that China had also cracked the encrypted documents, which contained details of secret intelligence techniques and information that could allow British and American spies to be identified. One senior Home Office official accused Snowden of having, quote, blood on his hands, although Downing Street said there was, quote, no evidence of anyone being harmed. That last paragraph alone is all the evidence of journalistic malpractice you're ever going to need. Yes, Snowden has blood on his hands, but there's no evidence of anyone being harmed. Let's go to the phones. Barth, good morning.
Hello. Why do you hate our country? I mean, really. If this guy was such a good person, how come no one is supporting him in high circles? How come the corporate media says he's such a bad person?
Well, because he's exposed the malfeasance of people in high circles.
No, that can't be it. Oh. He must be wrong. He must be evil. It's clear. I mean, if we didn't have a fascist state where the media conglomerates, the corporations, are controlling, I think it's clear to say, much of the government, financially at least, if not directly, then this wouldn't really be an issue. We would not have a problem with the revelations coming out because we would have a better grasp of how our government worked. Our government would have a better grasp of what its people expected of it and would tolerate and would not tolerate, and that they would not be adventuring all over the world in patently illegal ways, which have been revealed by these files, and life would be better.
So is your contention that Snowden acted correctly?
Well, yes. I think yes. That he's done us a service. I mean, it's kind of like picking at the scab, you know, about bringing wounds into sunlight and cleansing them.
Mm-hmm.
There are bad things in these files. There are things that most right-thinking people would find abhorrent. And the idea that because they're done by agents of the government and because they're done by political or military decree, that they should be above attention, they should be above review, and they should be above comment.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that that it's a comfort to some people that some of these things have been placed out of bounds, that it makes it easier for them to not think too deeply about what's going on, to go back to their lives, to be good consumers?
I have the wife of an old friend, and she was confronted by another friend just in passing, saying that, you know, he had applauded Snowden for his efforts and felt that he had really done a service. And she became unhinged and was literally, you know, spittle was flying out of her mouth, saying, you know, he's a traitor, he ought to be imprisoned and then killed because he has made us unsafe, because he has exposed the dirty underbelly, and that enemies, quote unquote, are going to seize upon this and use it to do us harm.
Did she mention any specific ways that we were unsafe, or did she just bring up a bunch of boogeymen?
Well, I think it was just the specter of bad people exploding things around the country or damaging our interests. But she, mostly, I don't think it was damaging our interests abroad as much as people here being hurt or killed, and I think that the trigger was that she or somebody she knew might be among them. You know, that this vague overarching nemesis that we all have to live with every day, according to Fox News,
I see,
was going to get her or us, and that this guy was responsible. That no one else was responsible, but by him doing this, he had brought this evil closer to us.
And this, in her mind, I suppose, trumped whatever constitutional liberties were being eroded by this activity. It was all fine with her.
Well, I don't know if it was fine exactly, but it was certainly less scary to think about, you know, that erosion, which people don't notice or own up to in their own lives on a day-to-day basis. You know, they're happening, but it's that incremental buildup of, you know, little losses, and suddenly, you know, the cliff is falling away because, you know, little tiny rocks have been falling out for a long time. And we have those things going on, all of us, and we may admit them to ourselves or we may not, and we may accept that this is just the nature of life in the 21st century, and we may not. But there are things that we can and should do that Mr. Snowden has brought into the light that I think the country would end up being better after a difficult time if we were going in the direction of more openness, less intrigue, and frankly, less malfeasance, less evil choices, you know, militarily, politically, you know, the alignment of the forces of the government with some of the worst people politically on the planet is a fact.
I agree.
And the fact that people don't want to admit that or don't want to, you know, make some noise and you know, rattle some doors and say, you know, hey, this is important. This is much more important than some of the silly stuff that passes for political will in this country.
Agreed. I think we're going to leave it there and give some others a chance.
Good
but
enough.
I appreciate your comments, as always. Thank you.
Thanks for you. Bye.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty that's indicative of the steep hill we've got to climb here. I mean, not only do we have news outlets, and I'm using that term very loosely, like the Rupert Murdoch-owned Sunday Times, spreading misinformation like this. But this story was picked up and run all over the place in various new forms of news media, uncritically and without any challenge of any sort. This is how misinformation just gets off and running. And when coupled with this sort of nameless fear that so many citizens struggle with now, in the wake of the terrorist attacks of September 2001, this nameless fear that's stoked by outlets like Fox News, by institutions like the Republican Party. This is a tough nut to crack. That's why what Snowden did is all the more important. Let's go back to the phones. Roger, good morning.
Hi. Z Magazine published Bernie Sanders' concession speech, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
anyway, no, he's not a patriot.
No?
No. He's a He's a hero. He's a world citizen. He should be. He should get that Nobel Peace Prize that they gave to Obama.
So it transcends patriotism. That he's
Patriotism is a crock. I mean, look at all the stuff that's done in the name of patriotism.
Oh, you're right. I would argue that that's more nationalism than patriotism. Yeah, but that's story for another time.
Shell Oil, they're not patriots.
No, that's true.
TPP is not patriotic. None of it is. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
That's all you want to say. All right, another.
I applaud him. I applaud Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras. And they're all heroes. And all this stuff needs to be exposed. And, I mean, hell, the CIA killed Kennedy. For patriotic reasons, supposedly. Come on. And there's lots of other things they've done in the name of patriotism. It's a bad idea. And the less of it, the better. Anyway, I'm going to get off my list.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Oh, nice to have you on the show by yourself for a change.
Oh, thanks. I'm kind of enjoying it myself.
Great.
Thank you for the call. I am not, at this time, going to officially endorse the notion that the CIA was responsible for President Kennedy's assassination. 503-231-8187. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. You can give us a call at that number I just rattled off, or you can leave us a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Let's go back to the phones. Susan, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you for posing this interesting question. I would have to say, and I don't think I'm alone, that I have a mixed reaction to what Mr. Snowden did. I can understand in the context of his work how alarming it must have been for him to begin to become aware of what was happening and that the potential violations of many civil rights of millions of Americans, etc. And like all whistleblowers, he probably really wrestled with, what do I do? Do I do anything? How do I do it? And all of those questions. But there is also a part of me that takes issue with the way he did it. I would have personally liked him to have perhaps sought out the New York Times or some other paper rather, or some other news venue rather than WikiLeaks.
Oh, he didn't go through WikiLeaks.
He didn't?
No.
Oh, I thought, I would have rather that he slowly, you know, release the information to American-based news outlet, and even if he had been rebuffed initially, most newspapers or most news outlets, well, their investigative journalism instincts will get them, and they will start digging and start digging, and things would have come out to a greater extent. So I just, you know, I'm on the fence about how I feel. I think I can understand his outrage. On the other hand, people suffered very possibly because of his disclosures. That is, people who were in, you know, undercover or whatever. And so, you know, I haven't really sorted it out for myself. But in talking with friends, I think that perhaps I'm not alone. I'm not at all against being a whistleblower. I realize how much courage that takes and how alone one feels, and that very often the whistleblower is penalized and ostracized and not listened to. In this particular case, he was blowing the whistle on the United States government, and I mean, you really can't get any bigger than that.
That's true.
So you know, the ostracism and the marginalization that he was going to feel is certainly, you know, probably second to none in terms of other whistleblowers in the last couple of decades. But I, to this day, when his name comes up, I would be less than honest if I didn't say, I wish you had tried a different way somehow. And I'm not sure, I was a little hesitant to even call in this morning because I don't have any answers, mm-hmm. really, even to my own question. I wish he had tried a different way to try to bring attention to what he saw was happening and how upset he was about it. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say, because I don't have any answers to my own question.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Susan brings up some interesting tangents to this conversation. One, was anybody actually endangered or possibly even killed as a result of these of Mr. Stone's revelations? Like I mentioned earlier, the FBI originally came forward and said yes, the agents had been compromised, but they later retracted that statement. And please call, if I'm wrong here, please call in and let me know. To my knowledge, there has been no evidence brought forth that anybody died or had their covert operations or covert activities disclosed as a result of Snowden's revelations. Again, I could be wrong about that, but I believe that there hasn't been any of that sort of fallout. And I want to read to you a little bit of some of Snowden's own commentary on what he did. On July 12th of 2013, he met with a number of global human rights organizations, and he said this: "The Fourth and Fifth Amendments to the Constitution of my country, Article 12 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and numerous statutes and treaties forbid such systems of massive, pervasive surveillance. While the U.S. Constitution marks these programs as illegal, my government argues that secret court rulings, which the world is not permitted to see, somehow legitimize an illegal affair. I believe in the principle declared at Nuremberg in 1945. Quote, individuals have international duties which transcend the national obligations of obedience. Therefore, individual citizens have the duty to violate domestic laws to prevent crimes against peace and humanity from occurring." End quote. I think that about sums it up. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say I support what you have said, what I have read and listened to in a variety of places. I believe he was a great hero. I'm 82 years old. I lived through an awful lot of stuff in my past, and I remember the Daniel Ellsberg affairs, what went with that, and all the hoopla and outcry of that. It simply is one of those things when somebody exposes and they don't want to be exposed. And
true.
We've not done a very good job of listening wherever it comes from.
Yeah, nobody likes being caught, do they?
No.
That's always embarrassing.
which is why, if you haven't done anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So does Snowden deserve what's happened to him since? Does he deserve to live in exile in Russia?
In my opinion, I think he deserves far better than that. I admire his courage. I admire his bravery and his willing to take on what he knew would be coming down on him. I think it's just, to me, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, to me too. I mean, I think about that. He faces the prospect of arrest and imprisonment if he returns to his home country, and quite possibly the specter of assassination. And that is a hell of a burden to take on.
Well, he's already watched and seen what happened to two other people who did some information and what the kind of torture they went through. And the certainty that if he comes back, they'll listen to him. They'll give him a fair trial. And my cynical remark is, before they hang him.
Before they hang him. Well, thank you very much, sir, for your comments. Appreciate it.
Thank you for yours, and thanks for the show.
You betcha.
I really appreciate it. Peace.
Oh, same to you. Bye-bye. 503-231-8187. Who's next, Steve? Harry, good morning.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Yes, I think Snowden is a hero for bringing all this information to light. Especially, I was really aghast when I found out the spying on foreign leaders.
Yes, right?
Yes, that was really something else. But the war against the whistleblowers, I think, started during the Iraq War. Remember that prison, Abu Ghraib?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one of the soldiers there, they were forced to take pictures of what they were doing. He turned the pictures over, and he did 3 years in prison.
Yes, he did.
So I think what Snowden did was really great. My last comment is you were mentioning Bernie Sanders.
Uh-huh.
No. How about How about Al Franken?
How about Al Franken?
For president. I'm serious.
Yeah, you know, I could see that.
Yeah, and we can take his posters and his sayings from Saturday Night Live when he ran for president then and use them.
That's perfect. Now, we can all rest easier knowing we had a president who was first looking for the joke in a situation before he was looking to press the button. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, well, thank you for the call, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Al Franken for president. 503-231-8187. Before we go back to the phones, Snowden gave a few interviews early on after he made his revelations. And somebody asked him, we spoke a little bit about this earlier, about who elected him, quote unquote, to expose the NSA's activities. This is what he said. Dianne Feinstein elected me when she asked softball questions in committee hearings. Mike Rogers elected me when he kept these programs hidden. The FISA court elected me when they decided to legislate from the bench on things that were far beyond the mandate of what that court was ever intended to do. The system failed comprehensively, and each level of oversight, each level of responsibility that should have been addressed, they all abdicated their responsibility. So he's saying, he's looking around at evidence of systemic failure, systemic cover-up, and an unwillingness on the part of his peers to do anything. So he decided to act in the face of all of that evidence. And he is now, I suggest, paying a pretty steep price for that. 503-231-8187. Larry, good morning. Excuse me, Ted, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Kabu. Yeah, I'm willing to bet. I can't give you any exact names, but I'm sure that there are people complaining about Snowden that were just fine with what happened with Valerie Plame when Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney and Paul Rumsfeld and all them guys decided it was fine to out her.
Yeah,
why
right.
Why wasn't somebody prosecuted for treason over that?
Yeah, nobody went to jail for that.
Scooter Libby got a little slap on the hand, $100,000 fine or something. He got some jail time, but then Georgie Boy
yep.
turned him loose.
Yeah, his sentence was commuted. Yeah, you're right. I guess he did spend a little time in jail.
So the question to anybody that says that Snowden should be tried and convicted of treason, you got to answer the question, well, who got tried and convicted in the Valerie Plame affair?
Yeah, that's a very good point, sir. The double standard is pretty galling.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. 503-231-8187. This is KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. If you're listening on one of the internet tubes, www.kboo.fm. If you want to leave a comment that way, you can. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/Abe and Joe. That's a good place to comment if you're not unable to jump onto the phone. Who do we have next, Steve? Larry, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Abe. Good show. You know, we wouldn't even be having this conversation if Snowden hadn't done what he did. We'd just be going about our merry ways, thinking everything was just fine. And one other thing is that how even if the government were able to come out and say that somebody had been damaged, a spy or whatever, had been outed, how can we believe anything coming out of the government anymore? How is there any faith in anything the government says?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because that's the subtext to all of this. The very revelations that Snowden revealed undermine the government's general credibility. You're right. So how are we to believe anything they say in the wake of this?
On anything.
They need to produce hard evidence or shut up.
Yeah. Yep. I'm off. Good show.
Hey, thanks very much. 503-231-8187. We're talking about Edward Snowden, who's back in the news again following an egregious breach of journalistic practice by the Sunday Times, a British newspaper owned by Rupert Murdoch. The paper alleged that Chinese and Russian hackers had broken into this stash of files that Snowden had collected and stolen them, compromising the identities and the activities of several British spies who then had to be recalled from duty. None of this has turned out to be true. The timing of this article was questioned because it happened to correspond with two things, a ruling here in the United States that, yes, the NSA's mass collection of telephone data is, in fact, subject to judicial review, as it should be, and anything resembling a constitutional democracy like ours. And secondly, the fact that a newly emboldened Congress ironically led by the so-called libertarian Rand Paul, decided to challenge the renewal of certain portions of the USA Patriot Act pertaining to this sort of surveillance. So taking a step back and looking at all this, it appears this renewed attempt to smear Edward Snowden is an attempt to distract from the fact that the surveillance state is now getting the scrutiny that it, in fact, deserves. Who do we have, Steve? James, good morning.
Good morning, Abe. Snowden is a hero. Have you read Project Paperclip?
I have not.
Read that. Thousands of top Nazi officials were brought into the CIA after World War II. The CIA was in on a plot to assassinate Kennedy. George Herbert Walker Bush was part of that. And also the CIA is funding all these factions over in the Middle East, like Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
Oh, okay. Operation Paperclip, I'm looking at the information right now. So
yeah,
after the war, about...
good. Thousands of Nazis were brought into this country, top Nazi officials.
Scientists, technicians, and engineers, mostly, it says here.
Yep.
Interesting. Was that all, or did you have some more?
That's it. That's all I got.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Again, I don't want to get into who shot President Kennedy. Not at this time. 503-231-8187. Who's next, Steve? Sheila, good morning.
Good morning. Well, yeah, of course he's a hero. Now, I have a couple of questions, though. It seems to me that not too long ago, whistleblowing was declared not to be a crime, that they were going to persecute, and I say persecute, not prosecute, whistleblowers. And yet we have whistleblowers that come out and report crimes, and they are considered the criminals for having reported the crimes, and the criminals never get prosecuted. We can take look at Chelsea Manning, who reported murders being done of people on the ground by these guys in a helicopter, and we have never heard of anything about these Marines in the helicopters being prosecuted. So what's going on here? You know, we have all kinds of whistleblowers in the corporate world, and the criminals never get punished, but these poor whistleblowers lose their jobs and never get a job again. And
yeah, that's true.
They go through hell.
The Obama administration, in fact, has gone after whistleblowers, particularly those who reveal government malfeasance, with more vigor than any other presidential administration.
That's right. And those that commit these crimes never get prosecuted. I don't get it. Now, the other thing is we're being told now that they are no longer spying on us, that they have stopped with this surveillance. And we didn't know that it was going on to begin with. So how do we know that they're telling the truth now, which we don't? And I don't believe that they've stopped.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, until we see evidence, how are we to believe anything?
And we can't tell.
Right, we can't.
They do it so secretively. Yeah,
it's you can't prove a negative conundrum.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So I think the spying is still going on. The whistleblowers will still go to jail. They should never go to jail if they report a crime. What's going on here? The world, it's like Alice in Wonderland. The world's upside down.
Well, you're right, and I appreciate your call. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What's going on, she asks. Here's what I think's going on. I think we are nominally, at best, a constitutional republic. I think we long ago lost citizen control of the levers of power, if we even had it at all. I think that our system is so thoroughly corrupt, so much in the hands of the moneyed interests who control global capitalism, that this is where we find ourselves, where whistleblowers are thrown in jail, where people who act in the name of the people's right to know what its government is doing in our name are not celebrated as the heroes that they are, but persecuted and run out of the country. That's where we are. That's why this is happening. The presidential election of next year that I'm hesitant to talk about now is nothing but a dog and pony show. In the end, we'll have a choice between two people who have been pre-approved by the ruling class. nobody's prerogatives will be challenged in any meaningful way. We could have 1,000 Edward Snowdens with billions of secret files, and it wouldn't change anything. 503-231-8187. Who's next? Roy, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I happen to be reading a book by about Jung's seminar on Nietzsche's Zarathustra, and I think it's esoteric, but he talked about the hero there. Mm-hmm. And the hero necessarily undergoes self-destruction. And this idea that we're going to praise the hero. See, heroes of organizations get heroic treatment. They get awards, rewards. They get streets named after them, schools named after them.
But yeah, and they get the stamp of legitimacy is what they get.
Yes, because because we live in an unredeemed, underbecome world. You have to expect this. But one thing I would like to hear more on cable is go after the institutional left of big government, which works hand in hand with big corporations to produce these effects. Obama's been giving a pass. I don't know. I'm tuned in about 20 minutes ago, but he was for a renewal of the Patriot Act, as far as I understood from the news. And this needs to be pointed out.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I like to think on this program we have been critical of what passes for the institutional left these days. But you're right. I think maybe it's time for a little deeper a deeper look at that.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, author and activist David Corton speaks on a new story. And while I'm at it, thank you, KBOO members, for your general support. If you're not yet a member of KBOO, it's really quite easy. Just visit our homepage, kboo.fm, click on the tip jar, and just like that, you're a member of KBOO. 503-231-8187. Edie, good morning. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm responding to Sue's concerns.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go to WikiLeaks, as you said. Two, if you wanted him to go to American investigative newspaper, he had already had seen what had happened when folks would give it to American newspapers. He had already seen how the New York Times, L.A. Times, San Francisco Chronicle, et cetera, the Wall Street Journal, were complicit with some of the same lies, and when people tried to expose truths, how they betrayed the whistleblowers. He already knew that the CIA and the Council for Foreign Relations has been heavily engaged with the major investigative newspapers, or formerly investigative newspapers, to gather information and to squash information and to change the story told to the public. He went to globally respected investigative news sources in Great Britain, in Germany, and by folks who, one of whom lives in Brazil, where those people would not be under the jurisdiction of the United States to squash the information from being publicly known. And the FBI and CIA and representatives for the federal government stated that nothing that was exposed was unknown to enemy nations. I mean, it's pretty well known anyway. The problem was that it wasn't known by so many American citizens, that a lot of people within the U.S. government and in other governments already knew this, but he just pulled it together so that we might have no excuse to not act on it, just as the White Rose Society in Nazi Germany kept sending out little flyers everywhere so people could not pretend they did not know about the genocide and the profiteering. And so if she wanted him to have folks know about it, taking it, for example, to the Christmas Science Monitor, New York Times, L.A. Times, San Francisco Chronicle, Oregonian, was not going to result in the public knowing about it. And it would only chill further people from the integrity. It would not have helped Columbia College of Journalism or, you know, those that for example, have the top censored stories each year. They would lose their funding. They would lose their jobs. We already see what's happening to intellectuals and professors.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want the truth out, it's not that. The second thing is she says it's very lonely and you're stigmatized. I don't think he was worried about being lonely and losing social status and stigma. It's about torture. He'd be tortured, imprisoned, tortured, and murdered. And people he loved would be tortured. He only saw that's what they do. That's what they've attempted. That's what they've done to other whistleblowers. It wasn't about, oh, poor me, I'll feel lonely, and I'll have a stigma.
Hmm.
And third, there is much that we can do in our own daily lives, in our prayers, in our conversations with people, in our actions, what we subscribe to as far as news sources, so that we are pushing our own envelope, our comfort zone, because, I don't know, maybe I'm assuming she's a Christian, but a devout Christian would want to obey Christ Jesus, which was always rebuking hypocrisy and oppression, mm-hmm. and demanding that we examine and change our own faults since.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. We are simply out of time. My apologies. Thanks to everybody who took part in the conversation today. This is always such a good time for me, mostly because you guys are really smart observers of American political life. Joe is off next week. I'll be back at you again. Until then, keep on keeping on.
From the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. It's a minute after 9 o'clock.